powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You know, this is supposed to be a safe space. I want this to be a show where anyone and everyone can come in and we can talk about sports. We can debate what we like, what we don't like. It's fun. We're all friends here.
I thought that's what this is.
It's not. It's actually not. Because
it's not.
A day after you guys panned me for getting my adorable new bag, saying that it looked like the 1987 sheepdog or whatever.
from Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, hilarious. Now I come in, good. I'm wearing an adorable sweater, 710sports.com/video.
It's incredibly colorful.
It's adorable.
It is.
It and, lightens up the room. It just nothing but good vibes.
And Curtis walks in and says,
"It reminds me of the dust that's on the bottom of your cereal bowl after you eat Fruit Loops."
Oh, man. Nailed it. It's exactly what it looks like.
I just once want to come in here.
I couldn't figure out what it reminded me of, and it reminds me of my childhood. That's exactly what it is.
That's what it is.
Yes.
All right. Well,
it's fantastic.
Hey, I do what
Thank
I can.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I do what I can.
Fruit Loop inspired sweater.
That's not what it is, Jake.
I think that's what she was going for.
Fruity pebbles.
Not what I was going
Captain
for.
Captain Crunch.
Absolutely
I mean, there's
not.
Lots of options
okay,
there. But.
Okay, that's enough. I want to start by talking
Curtis
about
again.
Not a Seattle team at all, but I'll tell you why I'm talking about it. If anyone else watched last night's game between the Pats and the Bills, it was pretty ugly at times, in part because of a storm, a winter storm that saw wind gusts upwards of 40 miles per hour. Gross, disgusting. But
it looks so cold.
It's also something everyone's talking about this morning because the Patriots had not 20, not 10, not 5, but 3 pass attempts the entire game and won the game. So there's all kinds of conversations coming from it, right? Like, how is an old school style back? Is Bill Belichick a genius? How did he adapt? Like, I'm fascinated by all these conversations.
I love it, too, by the way. Like, for the old school, like the run-heavy fans out there, I'm so glad this game happened for you. Like, I really am, because there is nothing that gets the old school fan or the run first fan more fired up than games like this. And then the proclamation that, hey, old school football's coming back, man. It's coming back in a big way. I mean, to me, it is an overreaction to the wave that was the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs, the 2017-2018 Los Angeles Rams, where everybody, honestly, the whole NFL was talking about this is the new wave and the passing game's going to take flight and all that. I mean, there have been very few teams that legitimately can major in just one thing and dominate in that one thing. And the run game has always been an important aspect of the game for you know, many teams. And when you look at the Buffalo Bills, I mean, they've kind of gone through a little bit of a struggle this year, and Josh Allen has played a little bit more down to earth, still a good quarterback in this league. But, you know, in games like this and moments like this, when you need the run game, they were not able to really turn to it, Stacey, and be able to have that in their bag. And guess what? The New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, they were able to do that.
The thing I don't get is I agree that Bill Belichick is perhaps the most adaptable coach we've ever seen in terms of the different iterations of Patriots teams we've seen, in terms of those teams being incredibly successful. Not just,
Without
oh, the Patriots
question.
Have a down year because they're leaning into the run. No, it's the Patriots have been a standout defensive team, especially in the early 2000s, and obviously more recently in 2019 and moving onward. They have been a high-flying offense, right? They've been an offense that leans heavily into Tom Brady for good reason, for 2 decades. I mean, they've been different kinds of teams, with the only common thread for 20 years being Brady, Belichick, and finding a way to win. But I guess what stumps me about it and makes it so interesting to me is it's not like every other head coach. It's not like 31 other head coaches, if you were to ask them how important is adaptability, wouldn't say it's incredibly important. That's what I don't. Mm-hmm. That's what I guess I don't get is like every head coach in college, in the NFL, knows you have to be adaptable. You have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to win in the pass or the run, and you have to know your strengths and play to your strengths. Absolutely, but it's that's what I don't get about it. And I do think that some coaches prioritize staying as true to their identity as they possibly can. And they might carry that identity from college to the pros. Mike Salk a while ago was talking about Chip Kelly doing so and less effective at the NFL level for him. But with some head coaches being like, I know who I am and I'm going to carry this with me. And I'll adapt a little bit, you know, if I get different weapons. But ultimately, I know who I am. I can't tell if the Patriots have just lucked out and constantly been able to find something that works or if it's been more than that. And if it's been more than that, why isn't every other head coach and team doing that?
It's definitely more than that. You don't have two decades of lucking into, oh, I think this works, or, oh, this might work for this guy, or, hey, we're going to have a different offense that revolves around talented players that maximize the strengths of the team, right? And obviously having the greatest quarterback of all time, Stacey, is going to help with that process. But, I mean, you just watch the evolution of the New England Patriots, and it is incredible to watch. And really, this iteration of the New England Patriots is very reminiscent of when Tom Brady first took over. A tremendous defense that leads the team and sets the tone for the team. A quarterback that is a game manager that makes good decisions, that puts them in the right spots, and that they have a solid running game to complement what they're doing defensively. That, to me, is very reminiscent of the first iteration that you had with Tom Brady. That doesn't mean they're going to go win Super Bowls. That doesn't mean Mac Jones is going to become Tom Brady. But that is the style of team that they are as of right now. Then you watched over the decades and watched them evolve into a heavy passing attack with Randy Moss and Wes Welker and Tom Brady. And then they changed their offense from that group to Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. And, you know, eventually you morph and you change. And then eventually to finish it out, you become a more defensive-minded, run-heavy-oriented type of offense with Tom Brady leading the charge. You just go and change and evolve over time. And to your point, it's one of the great frustrations that I've had with the Seattle Seahawks. If I'm just going to be completely honest with you, I believe that this era, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, this era should be more successful than what it has been. And it's been unbelievably successful, and it's not to discount anything that they have done. But when you still had the Legion of Boom, I still think that they should have made one more Super Bowl appearance, maybe one more win. I just think there was more
meat on the bone.
There was more meat on the bone, absolutely. And a part of that is the lack of adaptability. And if you adapt and you morph and a true form of balance, I think when we talk about this offensive discussion, it gets put on polar opposites. You got to be run heavy and you got to have that physical run presence. You've got to be pass heavy and you got to be, you know, up with the analytics and the new, you know, way of the game. To me, a truly great balanced offense is the ability to go in and be malleable and adaptable based off your opponent each and every single week. It doesn't mean you're making stuff up as you go. It doesn't mean you don't have an identity. But when the game calls for you to run the football heavily, you can do that and do it effectively. When the game calls for a favorable passing matchup, you lean into that and you don't hesitate and you do it effectively. That, to me, is a great balanced, truly great balanced offense, Stacey. It's not about run-pass ratios. And I think that that's what Bill Belichick has understood better than anybody in the NFL, and it shows.
Now, King of Shade, Matthew Judon, says everyone gets credit for this win except for maybe Mac Jones. Maybe Mac Jones doesn't get too much credit. Another King of Shade, though, challenging for that battle in this one is Sean McDermott, Bill's head coach. That, you know, I'm coming in here saying, hey, Bill Belichick, what a genius. Sean says, well, yeah, but wait, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here.
Let's not give more credit than we need to give credit to Bill Belichick in this one. It was, whether it's Bill or anybody else, they beat us, right? You sit here and you tell me when we start with the average starting field position of the 40-yard line and he starts with the 23-yard line, and I'm rounding up in both cases, and we were 1-for-4 in the red zone and they're 0-for-1 in the red zone, you give me that ahead of time, I'm saying I like my chances.
Like, I don't know if this game ends up the same way with New England winning 10 times out of 10. Like, this really could have gone either way. In fact, New England stats, when you just look at them, they were 2-of-12 on third down. Obviously, they had 222 rushing yards. That's bad for any team, any defense to give up. But, I mean, they also had a lot of things that went their way, like a missed field goal from the Bills or a turnover. You know what I mean?
Yeah, to turn my mic on here. Yeah, yes, I agree. I think that the idea of this, you know, this run-oriented attack and, oh, man, how much of a genius is Bill Belichick and all this stuff. Great job executing your game plan, but this wasn't some genius effort here, right? They lined up. They said that we're going to run the football. We cannot throw the ball in this weather, and we don't necessarily want to put it on Mac Jones on a rookie away and have him try to function with this weather. Simple as that. They weren't going to mess with that. And knowing that their defense can play the way that they can and give Josh Allen and the Bills a hard time in the weather, that turnovers were not going to be something that Bill Belichick wanted to mess with. And so I think it was a great job leaning into the right thing and doing the right thing. But they had multiple opportunities to lose this game. And few things happen, a missed field goal here and there. Josh Allen and, you know, two-minute drive. I mean, at the end of the game, if they're in regular weather, they're not playing this way. If they're, you know, Stacey, you'd mentioned it in our show prep, if they're in a dome, if they're in Louisiana and playing the New Orleans Saints, they're not going to throw the ball just three times. They understood the assignment, and they showed up, and they executed the assignment. Clear cut. And I don't know how else to put it other than that. And the Bills, as Sean McDermott said, look, we missed out on opportunities. We had the ball in favorable field position. We still couldn't take advantage of it.
Quickly, a devil's advocate argument. We only have a minute or so left here, so I'll throw it to you pretty fast here. But if I'm arguing that, like, the Seahawks have, and I actually overall agree with you, that they've tried to adapt, but also that their instances of not adapting have come with important context around it. Does that change your mind? For instance, when, correct me if I'm wrong, did they lose to Dallas? That was the divisional round in 2019.
The wild card.
Wild card in 2018.
Divisional round in 2019.
So in 2018, the Seahawks were leading the league in rushing yards with 160 rushing yards per game. In that game, you're thinking, of course I want to run the ball. Of course we want to do this. And often with a run game, you don't succeed every single time. I mean, if you watch the beginning of this run game in last night's game with New England, they were awful. Like I said, they were 2 of 12 on third down. They could not get stuff done. It took, breaking out for, I don't know, I'm guessing like a 30, 40-yard touchdown, whatever it was, to really get things going there and open it up. I mean, in your mind, you want to stick with it. You want to stick with the run game and make sure it works. And looking back, in hindsight, at that game in Dallas, you're thinking, why didn't you throw it earlier? Why didn't you adapt? Why didn't you change? But it's because that had won games for you all season long. And then you look at last year. You didn't adapt with your run game last year. But guess what the conversation was all season long? Let Russ cook.
Yeah, it was. And I do believe that when you're talking about let Russ cook and in that conversation, I think that they clearly ran into a major roadblock of not being adaptable enough. So, yes, you came out on fire and you had this great passing attack. And then when teams challenged you in the second half of the season and started playing more too high coverage and taking away your explosive plays, it crippled you. Why? Because you were stubborn about it. And is that on Pete Carroll? I don't necessarily know if that's on Pete Carroll per se. Brian Schottenheimer, Russell Wilson definitely have a role in that as well. And so I think that between head coach, play caller, quarterback, you have to be on the same page and have to lean into that aspect. But one of the things I would say, Stacey, as to why that movement was so prevalent is because I think that it was the idea of taking advantage of your best weapon and then also knowing that you ran into those situations in 2018, 2019 in the playoffs and you did not go to your best player and it ended up costing you. You didn't go to him soon enough. And so I think that all of those concepts, Stacey, that we're talking about, again, polar opposite conversations, there has to be the meat in the middle. There has to be that ability to find balance and to have that idea of being adaptable. And the real true way of only being able to do that, if we're just being completely honest, is having a great offensive line. If you don't have a great offensive line, you're not going to be able to be adaptable and not be able to go into each game and be malleable. And that's the one thing that I think the New England Patriots have consistently had through these last two decades is a fantastic offensive line.
Coming up, we're going to announce the show's Seahawks code word for your chance to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the Chicago Bears on December 26th. Tickets for this game remain at Seahawks.com/tickets. Don't forget, you can stop by the Seahawks Pro Shop this holiday season for the latest styles, decorations, and in-store sales all month long. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, the biggest injury we're watching this week, obviously Jamal Adams. Pete Carroll did not have an update on Seattle's safety during his Monday afternoon press conference. So what is the real headline?
We're about to see how much Jamal Adams adds to Seattle's defense. That's what the real headline is. Yes, the important headline we're waiting for is how much time? What's the timeline? What are we going to see here? And Pete Carroll said to Mike Salk Monday morning, we're going to get our results later today. Those results weren't yet available at 3 p.m. I would imagine they have them now or will get them today. So if there is a move to be made where they're promoting someone from the practice squad, an extra safety or some defensive back help, I'm sure everyone has their eyes looking out for that. But the real headline, the long-term headline is, what does not having Jamal Adams mean for the defense, and what does the defense look like without him?
Well, and I don't know if we're going to love the answer to that question, because obviously we want the defense to succeed. Obviously we're going to be rooting for the defense, but if the defense is functional and it is playing well without Jamal Adams, I mean, it's definitely an indictment on your team. And I'm not going to be judging it, by the way, based off the Houston Texans. The Houston Texans are awful. They're terrible, Stacey. So if you come after the game and say, well, the defense played great against the Houston Texans, therefore they don't need Jamal Adams, well, I don't think that's a true indication. But if he's out an extended period of time and they play well against the Rams, who they're going to play the following week, now there's a conversation to be had. There's no question about that. And so when it comes to Jamal Adams and this whole deal, it just is frustrating to watch this player, who I think has played well with what he's been asked to do, not be fully maximized in the strengths that he has. And it reminds me, Stacey, of Jimmy Graham all over again.
Be very careful.
The only problem.
Tread lightly.
Hold on. But the only problem is that you paid more money for Jamal Adams. You gave up more capital for Jamal Adams. Therefore, there is even more pressure for Jamal Adams to be the right move and to be willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that that player is being incredibly impactful and meaningful for your defense.
Headline Rewrites.
What I heard there, Jake, is Jamal Adams is about to be one of the best at his position Seahawks franchise history.
What I heard was about Jamal Adams is about to somehow find a way to get 10 touchdowns in a season.
That's exactly what I heard. Headline number two, the Kraken reverted back to their early season ways with a 6-1 blowout loss to the Penguins last night. Starting goalie Philip Grubauer pulled after just 5 minutes of action, allowing 3 goals. What is the real headline?
Grubauer may not be able to get a save right now, but he did get his agent a very nice Christmas present this year with that 6-year contract. No takebacks. No takebacks.
Oh, sometimes these headlines, they just hurt. Like,
that's the point. I'll wait till the next
2027.
Jake, you just wait until the next headline.
Isn't there supposed to be maybe like some levity every now and then?
No, absolutely not. It's just
pure pain.
Well, you know what? There could have been levity. I came in here today feeling happy, wearing bright colors, excited. And then what happened? You guys told me that my sweater, which is adorable, looks like the dust at the bottom of a box of cereal.
Hey, I didn't say that. Curtis did.
You laughed at it. You endorsed it.
I laughed at it because
as though it was a bad thing.
Yeah.
That's the worst part of cereal. The dust at the bottom. When you take out a box of cereal has put the cereal box back and you pour it into a bowl and 3 pebbles come out and then the rest is dust, I want to find that
person. This is where you're wrong, because it makes the milk at the end very flavorful.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yes, 100%.
I don't like this analogy.
But with Philip Grubauer,
into the Kraken,
oh my gosh. Look, just when you thought they had figured things out, they remind you that they're still a struggling team and they're still trying to find their way. And the goaltending has been a big positive in terms of that part of that winning streak, shoring that up, playing better. But it has been a problem. And Philip Grubauer absolutely has not lived up to expectations this year. And you know, at first, the conversation goes to, well, you know, the defense, he's working with them and they're not setting him up, and he's still, you know, trying to feel out what kind of shots he's going to get because of that. And I think that at some point in time, you got to look at it and say, he's just not playing well.
You thought that was tough, Jake, that headline?
Mm-hmm.
Get ready for this one.
Oh, boy.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, Oregon star pass rusher and likely top pick in the NFL draft, Kayvon Thibodeau, has declared for the draft, and he'll skip the Ducks bowl game. What is the real headline?
I already know where this is going.
The uni switch to the pros should be easy for Thibodeau when he goes from Ducks green to Jets green. Now, the Jets are not going to be the number one overall pick, but the point
being...
They do
have pick number four and number five.
They do have four and five right now.
Which one is it going to be? Is it going to be four or is it going to be five? Because that's a big difference.
Or do you swap up with one of those?
Don't
you?
I don't think you give up two top five picks.
There's no way.
Top overall.
Or maybe Thibodeau slides. I don't think he will.
With how many holes the Jets have, you need as many bites of the apple as possible.
You do.
Exactly right.
They could be looking for a third top five pick somewhere along the way.
Point being, if the Seahawks still had this pick, we'd be talking about, is there any chance Thibodeau somehow drops to you?
True. And that
and
is
instead,
must be nice.
And instead, the conversation we're having is, well, you hope Jamal Adams finishes the year strong.
Yes. That's exactly what we're having, because you need that reassurance that this was not a total bust of a move in trading for Jamal Adams and then paying him like the highest paid safety. And I have to be honest, I am a believer in Jamal Adams. I am a believer in his talent and what he can bring to a team. I think he's a dynamic player if used the correct way. And he has clearly not been used the correct way in order to get the most out of him. And that is why this conversation is hard, because, you know, was it wrong to trade for somebody that you couldn't use as a traditional safety in general? I think some would say yes. Or is it wrong that the coaching staff has not used him in the way that they did somewhat similarly last year to get an unbelievable amount of production out of him? So I don't know. I mean, I'm caught in the middle on this one, but I do like Jamal Adams, and I am hoping that it can be a successful deal when it's all said and done. But right now, I can't confidently say that.
From the 253 on the Mac and Jack's text line, I know I didn't just hear Jake call it milk. You know what, 253, I definitely heard that too. Coming up next, we're going to continue this conversation a bit with the Braz, who's going to join us. I want to know what he's looking for in the final five weeks of the season. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is the Graz. Hey, Graz, what's up?
Hi, guys. How's it going today?
It's good. I mean, it wasn't a great night for the Kraken the other night. Seahawks coming off a win, though, and lots to talk about in college football, certainly. But I'm going to start with the Seattle Seahawks. We talked yesterday, Graz, about like what you take from a win, whether anything was encouraging. But I want to look ahead to the next 5 weeks. If you're Jody Allen, what are you watching for?
You're watching for the fight in the team, the fight in the dog, so to speak. You're watching to see if they continue to show the sort of effort, which was definitely shown against San Francisco. And I think if you haven't made up your mind, that's going to be how you make up your mind, is how the team responds to the adversity, you know, of probably not making the playoffs, and whether or not they still play in a way that makes you proud, I suppose.
You know, Graz, in that context, I think that's why it's so unique and extremely difficult as you evaluate the process. And let's say, you know, if you're evaluating the big three, Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Russell Wilson, if they go on a roll and they finish, you know, let's just say 4 or 5, I think that'd be an incredible feat for them in these next 5 games. And Russell Wilson's playing better. I mean, do you attribute that to everybody? Do you attribute that to Russell Wilson just waking up and playing better finally? I mean, that's what makes it so incredibly difficult as to, you know, where exactly you go with in this organization. Is there one thing outside of, you know, making you proud and you know, all that you're looking for from this group to have a better evaluation?
Yeah, I hear where you're going, Jake, and it's the tough thing is to evaluate the coaching staff the same way you'd evaluate the players. I mean, look,
right.
you, in the case of Russell Wilson, I mean, I don't think you have any doubts about you want to move forward with him. He's still a guy who's in his prime. He's going to be playing better as that injury heals, and you know, he came back early from it. You know, he already checks all the boxes, so I think it's really probably more on how they're evaluating the coaching staff, how the team is responding to the coaching staff, if they're going to continue in that way. But, of course, we're all, you know, completely in the dark. We haven't heard any public comments from the new owner, from Jody Allen, on any of this, so we're all just you know, just guessing, but I would think that you kind of can see from the player's standpoint what they're doing, and you know, that then you kind of look at the management standpoint, and you got to look at it in a different way, and the coaching standpoint has to be in a different way as well. So it's very, very tough to make those evaluations because the guys are professionals. I mean, they play hard every game. Have you ever been, and you have, I know, Jake, been down on the sidelines on an NFL field before the game? Everyone is excited to play. Everyone plays hard. Teams don't take weeks off. So players play hard. It's more difficult to evaluate what you got in that front office.
What have you made of Jamal Adams' season?
It's been a mystery to me. I think this is one of the big things that'll be brought up. I mean, you traded what you traded to bring in a guy who was a unique defensive player who rushed the quarterback, the most effective we've ever seen from a, you know, defensive backfield position, and now he's not doing it. I mean, he's simply not doing it. So I've been puzzled by his usage from day one and remain puzzled to this day.
Why are you puzzled by his usage?
Because I think that you were onto something last year. You were onto a unique look on defense where if he had been healthy the whole season, there's a chance he might have had double-digit sacks, and that was something that teams were having difficulty defending against, especially that second half of the year. So I'm not sure why you took away a player's strength, a player's apparent strength, which is what it seems to me like they did with Jamal Adams.
Now, Graz, you know, one of those aspects of it is the fact that, you know, Pete Carroll and his defense, he has a particular way that they run it, a particular way that he wants the safeties to be played. And last year, that's why it's really confusing to me, Graz. Last year, they were very willing to use him in the way that he was used more like with the New York Jets. And this year, he has been transitioned into that more traditional style of safety that we've seen here in the Pete Carroll defense for years and years and years. And I'm not quite sure what to make of it, Graz, if that's just what they believe is going on, what the right thing is to do for this particular year, or if that's the type of safety they want to make Jamal Adams.
I agree 1,000%, Jake. I have no idea. He's a young enough player that you could obviously, you know, make those sort of adjustments with him. But my question would be why. I mean, what did you see last year that you did not like? What happened last year that he did that you felt had to be changed? I just, you know, maybe it is fitting in more with the base defense, but I don't understand why you'd want to do that when you had such an effective weapon going last year the way you had him. So I'm more puzzled by that particular fact and how they've used him than anything else this year.
Hey, Graz, switching gears here, looking at the MLB lockout currently happening. I'm curious how it feels compared to other labor stoppages that mm-hmm. you've experienced in your time covering the league. I mean, does it feel like it's something that inevitably will end before spring training? Does it feel worse? I mean, in your own personal experience,
sure.
What does it seem like?
Well, it's always more serious when it's baseball, although I'm not so sure baseball is how I remember it, and that was the players having the advantage always over the owners in negotiating, because the players were willing to walk out, and they showed that most recently in 1994. And look, you know, you've got a situation here where the players are probably feeling like they've got to do more this time around. The way baseball's finances have gone is you now have teams tanking regularly, which is truly impacting the middle class. You know, baseball will point out that Max Scherzer just get $40+ million, that the top dogs are still getting paid, but there's an entire quote-unquote middle class that is not getting paid. That's going to be an issue. And, you know, to get into specifics, it'll be, you know, how many years do you have to be on a roster to qualify for free agency, and you know, baseball wants to have an age restriction in there. So to try and wrap it up in a bow for you, I think that this is more serious than any of the more recent ones. And I would not be surprised if this goes into spring training. I guess to say it's going to cause games in the season, it's hard for me to believe that they'd fall back on that and that the players have that kind of organization. But I do think this can definitely threaten the preseason. And it's the most serious one we've had in probably 20 years.
You know, Graz, that's why it's so perplexing to me as to the whole approach of the lockout and the hope that it will speed up the process of the negotiating tactics by the MLBPA. Do you anticipate that that's going to be the case at all, or are they just doing this lockout for no real apparent reason?
Well, the lockout's not being done by MLBPA; it's by baseball, and they're doing it basically to protect what happened in '94. Which was they went into the year and they gave the players the ability to strike and end the season in '94. So it's the owners who are not going to back down on the lockout, I don't believe, until they've got assurances that the players aren't going to walk out during the season at the very least. So I mean, you know, that's not even to solve some of the problems that they have. That's just the fear from the owner's standpoint that if they give the players the power to strike during the season, that players will, because they have.
He is the Graz, joins us every single Tuesday right here on Jake and Stacey. Thanks, Graz. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Graz.
See ya. There's a lot of national people sounding off about the futures of Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, and for the most part, you just take it with a grain of salt. But when Peter King says something, my ears perk up a little bit. Listen to what he had to say next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. And let me tell you guys something. When you hear reports from anyone, but certainly from national outlets about what's going on with the team that you cover or that you watch or root for locally, you always have to wonder where the reports come from. Is this someone that is just making stuff up? Is this someone that has a great connection? Is this someone that is a respected journalist that is just talking to a multitude of sources? Where's the information coming from, right? I always wonder that. Well, this information's coming from Peter King. Peter King is established, well-respected, has been around for a long time, has a lot of connections. So even though the sound that I'm about to play you, I'm gonna warn you right now, spoiler alert, it's not actually like hot takey. He's kind of hedging his bets on a lot of what he's saying. It's interesting. And it's interesting because you wonder, why is he saying it? Why does he think it? Is he just thinking out loud? Just kind of saying like, well, here's my interpretation of it. Or is he using his years of experience and connections to look at a situation and say something that should make Seahawks fans perk up their ears? This is about what's the future holds for the Seattle Seahawks, particularly when it comes to Jody Allen's impending decision about whether to do nothing, whether she's going to bring back Pete, Russ, and John, kind of what you're going to do. So I'm going to play two for you right here, okay? So let's talk first. Peter King saying the next few weeks, vitally important for Pete Carroll.
I think the next few weeks for Pete Carroll are vitally important for his future. I won't be surprised if they make a coaching change, but I don't think they're actively looking to make a coaching change. I do believe that Jody Allen is, you know, certainly has to be thinking about that and thinking about what she wants the future of her franchise to be. And look, Rich, I don't know this for a fact, but it's just a feeling I get.
Much like all of us do with every meal. I actually saved the best clip for last, so I'm going to play that in just a minute. But
perfect.
But first, it feels like he's saying a lot of nothing while also saying something that is objectively true. The next few weeks are vitally important for Pete Carroll, mm-hmm. not just for him, Pete Carroll, and his outlook on this team. And I will tell you right now, Pete Carroll is still looking at it like, we got a shot. And you know what? Mathematically, they do. More power to you. But
was it 3% now?
You're right. Yes.
Yeah.
3%.
There we go.
But
there's a chance.
But it's also vitally important because of the message that it could send to fans and importantly to ownership.
Right. There's no doubt about that. And the thing about Peter King here and somebody like him, when you put stuff out there, Stacey, I don't believe you're just putting it out there and then just hanging on the fence and being like, well, it can. It could happen. It might not happen. Like, the way that he's putting it out there, it's like the empty Garrett Cole threat. Oh, it would be a real shame if you know,
make you go sleep with the fishies.
It'd be a real shame if, you know, pitchers just,
you
because they couldn't use
that
spider tack, that all of a sudden, you know,
I
balls were just flying by batters' heads, and my gosh, that would be a real shame if that happened.
I'm
I mean,
saying
it might not happen, but it could happen.
Underqualified mobster.
Yes,
Cole.
Yes,
Garrett,
it's exactly kind of what's going on here with Peter King. It's like, look, these next few weeks are really important for Pete Carroll. Why? What is he implying? That if they don't, if it doesn't go well, that Pete Carroll could get fired, that he's legitimately on the hot seat here. That's what he's referring to, but then backs off, because if Pete Carroll doesn't get fired, then it's like, okay, well, I didn't say he was going to.
It is,
you
one
know,
of my biggest
just,
pet peeves about sports
I
coverage
can't stand
in
that.
General is that people want to pretend that they're hot takers while also kind of hedging their bets on every single thing. They might
yes.
win, they might not. And if they do, I get credit for it because I told you that they might. And if they don't, yes. I said that they might not.
Yeah, I'm not the idiot here, right?
Now, it's still an important conversation to have, an interesting, if nothing else, conversation to have. Now, here's the second clip. I said it was the more important one, and you're going to find out why pretty soon.
I think if Pete Carroll comes back, just my gut feeling, that Russell Wilson would probably want to have a chance to play elsewhere. It's not that he doesn't like Pete Carroll. I think he does like Pete Carroll. But, you know, he wants different. He wants a change. He wants something new. And I think that new could be a new situation in Seattle. We'll see. But again, a lot of that is going to have to do with what happens in these in this last month of the season.
Now, I haven't seen Pete's or Peter's full interview with Rich Eisen. This interview is from the Rich Eisen show. But I think a follow-up question would be, well, what's new? Because I can guarantee you, Peter King, that if what you're saying is true, Russell Wilson might not come back if Pete Carroll's here, because it's not because he doesn't like Pete Carroll, it's because he wants something new. What, like a change in weather? A change in landscape? A new house? No, none of that. Like, what? You're telling me that he just wants a change of scenery because he's bored? No. What is new? What is the change here? That's what's more interesting to me. What would he want that's different?
I mean, that's the part where I believe that when you're talking about that conversation, you're right. It isn't just like, oh, I want to change
the
scenery.
The answer
isn't,
I don't want to live in a beautiful neighborhood and I want a change of scenery to another mansion. That's not what new means.
Yeah,
I'll tell you that right now.
Right. It's not that. It's not, oh, I want to play at a bigger market.
He just doesn't want to wear blue.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's for 10 years, it's just, this isn't a good color on me, I've decided. And so, therefore, I need to go experience something else in my life. And we're not getting something here in Seattle that we could be getting something elsewhere. That,
so what's
that
new
narrative
mean?
To me is way overplayed. It doesn't even come close to what Russ and, you know, even Sierra of, oh, they need to be in a big market because Sierra's a superstar and she wants to be this and that. Know that is not.
So then what
the
does
case.
New mean?
To me, new is the idea of how about what Russell Wilson illustrated in the offseason this last year? I don't think it's really complicated from just a simple point of view of, hey, what are we going to do about the offensive line? What are we going to do to adequately address the offensive line to have a great group that can get it done and one helping protect me, also having a great running game that we can lean on? I think that you could start right there.
Now I'm going to interrupt quickly to just because we have a minute left, and I want to keep this moving to say that the Seahawks did make an effort to address the offensive line.
Did it work?
Well, no, but
okay.
But I'm saying, like,
so
what's
did
the
they
secondary
do? Did they do
that?
Everything that
what
they could to ensure that?
What didn't they do?
Well, I mean, first off, for starters, you only added Gabe Jackson, and you could have added at the center position, which was a clear need for you as well. You could have drafted Creed Humphreys. You could have went out there and been more aggressive in the free agent market in addressing and having a proven center in this league, and you didn't do that.
But what
and
if they drafted
Z. Eskridge? Has proven to be a big mistake that has hurt this team.
Hear me out. What if they drafted Z. Eskridge, who I believe was drafted before Creed Humphreys, because the offensive coordinator that Russell Wilson wanted to come in here wanted Z. Eskridge?
Yeah, and I agree. I don't disagree with the idea of Z. Eskridge. Z. Eskridge, obviously, we saw him this last week, and you get him the ball and you get him involved, you see the potential there. I mean, I'm sitting here saying you got to get him more involved yesterday, right? Because he is a unique talent. But it does not go to excuse the fact that this offensive line is abysmal. It doesn't go to excuse that, yeah, you could say that you addressed the problem, but you didn't really address the problem because it's not working, right? So
to me, that is, this is a result-oriented business. Did it work? Did it not? And over the years, you've said, you can say that the Seahawks have gone to great lengths to try to address the offensive line. But then that's also decisions of Luke Jokel and Bradley Sowell and Jermaine Ifedi.
Why are you doing
and,
this?
Well, because you brought it up. Oh, you asked.
I didn't ask for pain.
So when you look at that, I think that that is one of those things that you can look at and start there. I think that would be a great way to start there. And when Russell Wilson came out and said what he said in the offseason, people are like, well, why do you have to go make it public? Why did you have to voice that out? Why couldn't you handle it behind closed doors? Clearly because something was broken. Clearly because that conversation was broken behind the scenes. And if there's a healthy discourse going on behind the scenes, I don't think Russell Wilson goes on Dan Patrick and says what he says. So clearly that side of it, if they are more cohesive on that front, I think that that is a better deal. That doesn't mean Russell Wilson is making the decisions from a personnel standpoint and who exactly they go and get, but going and ensuring that side of it up. And it looks to me like that is a very, very relevant conversation to what has transpired this season, amongst other things. So that's just one of many in terms of what he could be after or what he would like to see from that conversation. And I think that ultimately what I've said yesterday is true. Russell Wilson wants to be here in Seattle. He wants to be at a Seattle Seahawk. And, you know, I don't think that he has this massive desire to leave, as Peter King is alluding here.
All right, still no update on how much time, if any, Jamal Adams could miss after injuring his surgically repaired shoulder. Now, this isn't a silver lining, but I do think it gives Seattle a chance to do something they did when Russell Wilson was gone. I'll tell you what that is next.